Today is March 6th, 2018. I'm Eric Leegee with the Rao Jewish History Program and Archives. This is the Bet Tikva Oral History Project, and I'm speaking tonight with Eileen Yaknam, and we are at the Heinz History Center. So, Eileen, if you wouldn't mind, start by telling me kind of where you grew up and how you grew up.
Okay. Well, I moved around a lot. I was born in Chicago. I'm 65 right now, so it's a long time ago. And my parents helped found a Reform Jewish congregation in the small, it was a newer post-World War II housing plan in Chicago. They've told me since that they were not raised as being observant of holidays, and so but they developed a community of people wanting to raise their children Jewish and have the synagogue. And so I grew up with a strong identity, and we moved from there to a small town in Illinois for a couple of years where there was not a synagogue. We had to go somewhere else, and my parents didn't like that, the area where they were living. My dad lost his job, so he found a job in Puerto Rico, and we moved to Puerto Rico when I was around 10 years old. There was a very conservative / Orthodox Jewish community and synagogue there, but not a Reform synagogue. So my parents helped found a synagogue there as well, and so that's where I also got my involvement in Judaism, from that synagogue and from my parents, who were that was very important for them. So I kind of always been interested in being involved in Jewish activity stuff, even more than really the spiritual aspects of Judaism. I think I was very attracted to the social justice aspects of Reform Judaism, especially. When I went away to college, I became quite involved in an organization that had been around when I was in college, called the Radical Zionist Alliance. And then actually I saw this when I was looking today online, I saw a 2016 announcement of a 30th reunion for the New Jewish Agenda, which also was a progressive Jewish organization, and they were doing a reunion in 2016. So I remember that I was part of that too in my college days. These leftist progressive type of organizations that were addressing social justice issues in the United States, and also at that time is the idea Israel, there was a lot of more hope about what Israel was, how it was governing and trying to make peace and good relationships with the Palestinians and moving towards that. And so those are the things I was involved with in college. I went to college at Oberlin and graduated there in 1974, and then went to Boston for law school. And I don't recall, I really probably wasn't involved a lot in any Jewish, I don't remember any Jewish organization stuff. But when I came here, when I moved to Pittsburgh in 1977, I can't remember though if I came out first as a lesbian before I decided to get more involved in Jewish stuff, or had gotten more involved in Jewish stuff first. Probably the former. I had a couple of really close friends who were Jewish and lesbians, and one of my friends and I had, we used to talk about Jewish stuff a lot, and we discovered that there was a group. At that point, there were a number of radical feminist Jewish women in the Northeast who were getting together. We learned that there was one. I don't know the name of it, but it was not the group that I started to become involved with, but a first group of very progressive Jewish women, not necessarily lesbians, who were getting together once a year, having a retreat. And I know there were a lot of very prominent Benot Eish.
Benot Eish.
Yeah, actually that means daughters of fire. So I don't know what sisters, Achyot. So the one I became involved with was kind of like a spin-off because that was a more of a closed group after a while. But it was an annual retreat, and so there was an annual retreat for this group that we learned about that was out northeast Philadelphia area, and then spread around the area, called Achyot, or Sisters of Light. And so my friend Faith and I, we went there about 3 or 4 times. It was a once a year thing. And also they were, I think anybody were to read about feminist Jewish analysis and history and stuff in the 80s, when early 80s, the women who were in these groups became those people who did the academic stuff that around in the history and stuff. And so as a result of that, Faith and I decided, we got kind of inspired going to these meetings, and not everybody was lesbian, but there were definitely lesbian people. A lot of them were rabbinical students in the Reconstructionist movement. There were several women who were like very, very Orthodox women who became to these retreats because they were finding things difficult but wanted also to remain Orthodox, but they were finding the restrictions to be too antithetical to feminism. It was a very fascinating group of people. And we decided that we were going to try to put together our own little Jewish lesbian group in Pittsburgh, and we called it Daughters of Lilith. And so we invited the friends we knew who were Jewish and lesbians to come to that group. And we started to meet regularly, and it was a kind of support group too, but we would have topics that we would discuss, and we would read books, and this was in the early 80s and mid 80s, and there were quite a number of books being published then, like I think there was a book called Daughters of Lilith, there was a book called Different Daughters, there was a book called Beyond Acceptance, and something else about gay and lesbian Jews also, so quite a number of books. But also at that time, maybe this was the World the Jewish Gay and Lesbian Congress. Is that what I don't remember?
The
that was
World
called
Congress of
Gay and Lesbian Jews. Okay, and I was aware of those organizations, and so that's what happened. I was aware of those organizations, that organization, and I did attend 2 or 3 of those annual conventions, which were also very inspiring and uplifting, but mostly men. And it was very interesting to me, and I wondered why, and I thought a lot about why that was mostly men at those organizations, those types of conferences. There were workshops, and there were a lot of good workshops, but there was also a lot of spirituality there that the men were really drawn to that, I could see. And, you know, I went to those things, the services and stuff like that. But during our discussions and also thinking about that a lot, it seemed to me that women, you know, gay women at that time had developed their own social networks pretty easily. Like in Pittsburgh, there were women's bookstores, and there was the women's restaurants.
Can you Bloomer, think of the names of any?
Well, Bloomers. Bloomers was the second name, I think, of the restaurant. There was one original the Birmingham Booksellers was the gay and lesbian bookstore, and then there was another one that came after that one had closed. something darn, I can't, Bloomers was the reincarnated name of this restaurant that did open up as a different, I can't remember now the name, the original name of that women's restaurant.
Do you remember what part of town it was?
Yeah, on the south side. There was actually this little restaurant on 23rd and Jane. I remember that. It was before it even was the women's restaurant and bar. It was Wobbly Joe's, which was like a lefty progressive type of bar. And they held, you know, talks and they had dances and they had it was a bar. And then the women's restaurant, people took it over. Or they bought it out after Wobbly Joe's was closed down. I went to all three of those a lot.
What was the third? Bloomers?
Well, the third was Bloomers, and then also it was a different. See, a certain group of women purchased the Wobbly Joe's and made it
something.
Damn, I cannot remember the name.
So there was Bloomers, Wobbly Joe's, and Wobbly Joe's became something else.
Originally Wobbly Joe's, it became something else, and then it was bought by another group of women and became Bloomers.
Yeah. All in the same location?
Yeah.
At 23rd and Jane?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you could probably find it. But, so there were those, and just women get together more, so it's easier for women to get together socially, I thought, or at least creating organization, informal groups to get together. But men had, so they found the camaraderie and the collegiality that we were having in other places they didn't have. There were bars, but that was not quite the same thing, the gay men bars.
Why was it easier for women?
I just think women are more, just because I think women were more naturally able to create these collegial and friendship type of groups together and communities, and they did. I don't remember any men's bookstores in Pittsburgh. There was, I think eventually there was a gay bookstore that Pleasant Present was in Squirrel Hill for several years, but that was way after this. And this was a time when, so there were the gay men's bars. And there were also several women's bars too, but gay women's bars. But apart from the bar scene, but that's all there was for men, was the bar scene. And there were these other types of ways that people got together. There was also in Pittsburgh, but all over, where there was a lesbian community, there were also, like, women's music was very big, like a whole bunch of different. There was a record label, several record labels that had feminist, lesbian, or just feminist recording artists, and very popular. And there was a group of people who got together to bring those those performers into Pittsburgh, and the women would get together for those performances.
Who were some of the artists?
Oh, like Meg Christian and Chris Williamson and Holly Neer and my mind's a blank, but those were the premier ones, I think. There were a whole bunch of others too, but it was more of a community. In fact, I actually, around the same time, and I did this for many, many years, I kind of organized a women's Seder. And it started off being just a small group of people in my house, but then it got more popular. People started asking me to come for it, even if they weren't Jewish. So then we started having to rent space, and we rented space at the Unitarian Church on Ellsworth to do that for a few years, and then we finally had several times this huge women's Seder, and we rented space at the JNR, where the day camp is in Monroeville, until finally it became, I just got tired, too tired of doing it. It was a lot of work. But anyway, so yeah, the women's community was always differently organized in that sense than the men's community.
You had said something before, I want to make sure I understood. You think that the men were more drawn to the spiritual stuff and the women were more drawn to the communal stuff?
No. I think that the spiritual stuff that the men were drawn to was because it was a way of being communal, of okay. relating communally in a way that it wasn't not like a consciousness raising group or something like that. I wasn't aware of men. There were, I guess, men who did that, but I wasn't aware of that, and I did. But that's where they could have their community. The men shared something more than just the other ways that they often gay men were relating through the spiritual stuff to getting together in a congregation.
So the spiritual stuff fostered a community for the men, yeah. but the women had a community that right. occasionally did spiritual things and occasionally
yes.
did other things.
Yes, and that's why I think that there were always far more men at these World Jewish Congresses because there was that opportunity for men to have nice communal time together yeah. in a way. Yeah.
And then on the Seder, why a Seder why were you compelled to have a Seder considering all the different kinds of things you could have in the world?
Oh, well, that's because Seders are always very important to me as we've always had a Seder growing up. Growing up in... Oh, that's that one. And, right, so that was a very important tradition in my life, and I wanted to make that available to my friends, and then it just grew and grew.
Were there any changes or alterations that you made to the Seder at that time?
Well, the very first Seders, maybe the first couple of years, it was a co-ed Seder, but then I decided to mostly do it with women and. You mean alterations to a traditional Seder? You mean
yeah,
or
like,
alteration?
Well, like the orange hadn't started then yet, had it?
Well, yeah, that started in the mid-80s, so okay. yeah, we did do that. And we would have, how I suggested everybody get to know each other, not get to know each other, but there were a lot of people. So what we would do is have everybody go around and we'd say have them introduce themselves by saying the names of their mother, their maternal lineage. So that was kind of Eileen, the daughter of Rosalie, the daughter of Gus, the daughter of Pearl, and go as far back as you can do, then light a candle. So that went around the whole place, and everybody did that, and everybody did candles. Now that you're asking, also at this time when there was all this feminism stuff coming around in Judaism, in Jewish circles too, there were a number of Jewish women seders or haggadahs that were created by different people. And I kind of put together, I melded together different types of these Jewish women seders that I found and put it together. So we had our own little haggadah that was the Jewish women's Seder, and then I didn't create it into being a lesbian Seder, but we incorporated, the four sisters we feminized it, and we included inclusive language about gays and lesbians too, in those Seders.
Did you write that, or did you find that language, that inclusive language?
Well, both. It was both.
There were people writing, there were Jews who were writing, starting to write in that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And this was, I guess, all in the 80s. It was really, that was happening a lot. I don't know if I still have, a box of old Haggadahs, and I might still have one of the ones that we used to use. I don't know. But anyway, that's what we were doing. And at the time, I don't know how the word got around, but there were some people who were talking about starting a gay synagogue and a gay congregation. And so I remember Mark Friedman being one of the people who was really involved in that, and I must have gotten to know him from just our political social circles, I guess. And I don't remember who else. I don't think Avram was involved originally in, I don't remember, maybe he said he was, I don't know, but I don't remember him. I actually know Avram because he and my, I have a twin sister, and they went to college together. And one day I was walking on the streets of Pittsburgh, and this guy comes up and says, "Ellen, it's so wonderful to see you." And he hugs me and all that. And I knew he must be, have been, whose friend he must have been, but that's how I met Avram. So the several women in Daughters of Lilith started to meet with these other men who, these other people who were interested in starting the congregation. So then I finally got into Bet Tikva. And I probably was involved with a woman who I've been together now for 30 years too. So, but we didn't have children. We had children since, but we didn't have children. And so that, which ultimately was the reason why I stopped being involved in Bet Tikva. But I do remember getting together and finding wanting very much to create a congregation. And
you had that desire.
Yeah. I felt it was really important to do too for us. And I hadn't joined any congregation beforehand. I'd gone to like high holiday services at various synagogues, just go, not being invited really, but just.
What did it feel like to go to those mainstream congregations?
Well, at the time, even the Reformed Jewish congregations really didn't have inclusive, even language including women in the prayer book. So they always were kind of alienating to me, and even the Reformed Jewish congregations. I didn't feel like there was any, I wasn't out openly as a lesbian, so it wasn't like I would go and feel excluded in any way just because I was only going for high holiday services. But it felt really good to me to be able to go to think about the idea of going to a synagogue where our community would be happily, that was our community then, right? It was part of all of our identities, Jewish and gay. So yeah, and then it was really important to me and to the people in my group, and my little Daughters of Lilith. And we didn't do things. We didn't say we were going to stop doing Daughters of Lilith, but we. I guess one thing even about the Daughters of Lilith that got us even more involved was one year we even had a conference. We had our own little conference in Pittsburgh where we had workshops and we showed a movie. And it was a very nice thing, and it attracted a lot of women too.
Where did you have that?
Well, we held it at Pitt. I think it was at the law school that we had that thing. It was nice.
Was this the one where the author came in?
The author, no, but we no. It was it was terrible that I cannot remember things. But there was a really great movie that we showed that it was about. Two women who were lovers. One was Jewish and one was not, in Germany during the beginnings of the Holocaust. And this whole story was about the story was how the Jewish woman was, she didn't, she went kind of underground and made me realize that there were a number of people who just tried to pass as not Jewish, and some succeeded in that. She did for a long time. Then the story got bad, but she did. She got caught in the end. But it was very interesting how she and her partner helped make that happen. That she passed for not being Jewish. It was very interesting. Anyway, so we showed that movie, and then we had. Talk speakers come, stuff like that.
And this was something that was sanctioned by Pitt?
So I don't remember. I remember it being at Pitt. I think there must have been somebody in our group who but I don't remember who it was, who obviously had some relationship with the university, and so we were allowed to have them.
But it was like advertised and publicized and everything?
Yeah, yeah. Huh. So they didn't care. So that was good. That was a nice, a fun thing. So anyway, so when we went into, I will say this, that even though I was very happy and we did a lot of work to help create Bet Tikva, it was, you know, the old, when there are a lot of men together who don't have a lot of experience working with women, it became a little bit more sexist than the way that things became developed than any of us really appreciated. But we continued anyway, and so like when the things about creating the prayer book to be used and stuff came up, that was kind of taken over by the men in the group, and so it was okay. Because it was such an important thing to have developed, but it was something that I didn't find as for me, something that I didn't, after things started becoming established and they were, I didn't stay as involved in helping organize it after that, keeping it organized.
Yeah.
But I went to services quite regularly then, and did Beth Shalom, Motive Shalom, has it always been at Motive Shalom? I don't remember it being somewhere else.
I don't think it was ever at another synagogue, yeah. But I think they might have met in people's houses originally.
Okay, yeah, right. And it was a wonderful thing that Motive Shalom has continued to allow Bet Tikva to be there, too. That's a wonderful thing.
So it was always at Rodef in your experience?
Well, I remember being in people's houses, too, but it would float. And then women who got involved in Bet Tikva who had not been involved with Daughters of Lilith there were some who became very, very involved women we knew who we came to know but who were not part of Daughters of Lilith, many of them became really, really involved for long periods of time with Bet Tikva.
You had this strong community. Mm-hmm. What did Bet Tikva provide for you that your existing community did not provide?
Mm-hmm. I think it was more traditional, having a synagogue was a more traditional way of having a community. And I wanted to expand my community to be involved with other people who were Jews in other ways too, not just my Daughters of Lilith community. So, and it did, and it was wonderful. The people were great, are great in that community, and it continues to be really welcoming and warm, and people have a good time and stuff like that. And when they get together for the holidays and stuff like that.
Why was the traditional side important?
Oh, because I was. That's when you grow up. It's always, and you have that in your life. And I wasn't somebody who rejected it, so I enjoyed that. I had it's comforting to be able to say to celebrate the holidays, even if I'm not sure I believe in God. You know, it's always a big comfort to repeat the tradition of your families, but unless you hate it so much that you just reject it, and I didn't. So so that was very important to me.
What were the prayers like before there was a prayer book?
Uh, We had also found other, we did find other, there were other gay synagogues in the, around, and we were just borrowing those, using those. It was, we were able to get them, even though there was no internet, but we were, you know, people had visited, going to the World Jewish Congress, they people had their prayer books and could, that they had compiled. So, and I think we, and then I think probably the people who did create the, so I don't even know what their current prayer book is like actually right now, but the one that they they compiled was a compilation, also kind of like what I had done for my Haggadah, except that for some reason the people who put together the original prayer book that Bet Tikva used really loved Leonard Nimoy, and there are tons of quotes, which I'm not quite sure, but that's what they a lot of him in the prayer book. And there were also, and then also it was quite fascinating to me that there were several members who came who were not gay or lesbian, but just really were attracted to maybe the less formal way of the services were, and the people in smaller congregations. I think it seems common that people are very friendly, in much easier to be friendly to people, newcomers, than if you're a big congregation. And people were very welcoming, and there were so many people who became members who just loved that part of it too. It's again the communal, you know, acceptance as part of a small community. Everybody feels accepted, and I'm sure it still is that way too.
Did you feel like there were leaders of the congregation, or did people seem to be?
Well, people. No, there were people who took on leadership roles, and after became established, I was not part of that. But Nahum and Steve, Golem is one of their names. I forget the other.
Yeah.
They very quickly became one of the leaders, and I don't remember their last names, but two women, Terry and Pat, also were became very big. Terry especially. Terry was Jewish. Pat was not, but she was part of the TikTok. But
is they that Terry Sterrett?
Yeah, Terry Sterrett. Yeah, and she passed away a few years ago.
And is Pat McQuiston?
Wait, no. Pat died. It was Pat who died, and Terry's alive, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they. Terry also became a big leader, and leader meaning helping organize the services and helping lead the services as well and stuff like that. So those were the people that I was very much involved with, aware of, who had done that. And I'm sure there were others too, but I don't know if you know of others. People have mentioned others.
It seems like when Nahum and Steve and Terry and Pat showed up, it's like almost chapter two of Bet Tikva.
Mm. Okay.
How would you describe the difference between before and after? Like, what did the congregation look like before them?
Well, I think that they helped. They created the structure that it needed in order to be able to continue. It was definitely more not really extemporaneous, but not really being run in an organized way that would make sure that things get done for the next time. So I think they really helped with making that move. That was pretty important, or else it was going to fall apart like other organizations too, I think, without that. So
there's a note here about Terry and Pat being part of the lesbian parent group.
Yeah. So I helped with organizing. There was another thing that came about. So our older daughter was born in 1991. But around that time, also in the early 90s, there was a big flourishing of lesbians having children. And then that was even before there were gay men having children. But so we organized a group of lesbian parent group. And they happened to move, they happened to live down the block from us when they adopted a couple of kids from Russia, and so yeah, we were maybe that's even how I met them, I'm not even sure, but whatever, Terry Stair really became a big leader in the Bet Tikva.
Did that group have a name?
Yes, but I don't remember what it was. Yeah, it was definitely not Flow, which kind of, that became more of a co-ed group because there was more families like ours, I guess. Yeah, we had, but I don't remember what the name of the group was. And it, you know, it went around to different people's houses and stuff. And sorry, I don't remember the name of that. It's big on groups. Well, so, but what happened for me is that when, and my partner, I apparently you had said you'd be interested in speaking to her too, but she was not at all involved in, she went along, but she never was involved in anything to help organize any of this stuff, and she didn't feel comfortable. But although she's in a lot of other archives, because she has a lot of, she's a huge, interesting background herself in different things, but she's, but, so, when Leah was born, we stayed involved with Bet Tikva until she was around 5 years old. And then I kind of realized, like, I really wanted them to get a Jewish education. And so we joined a Dor Hadash, a Reconstructionist synagogue then. And she was five. I guess we had a young, Hannah was born when she was 2 and a half. So we had the two kids then. And I just couldn't stay involved with both types of congregations at once. And so
just
so
for time, you mean?
Yeah, especially with having the kids. It was just, so.
If Bet Tikva had a religious school, would you have stayed there, you think?
I think I might have. Although, for a while I would have. I think in the end I left Dor Hadash for the same reason I think I probably would have left Bet Tikva eventually, which was that it didn't have a rabbi. And I also wanted more of that for Leah and Hannah to see, too, not just Dor Hadash still doesn't have a rabbi. And so you have to depend on lay people for the congregation, which is what that is, which is great. But I also, you don't have the people, you don't have those particular, what the rabbi can do, Bet Tikva still doesn't have, which is something, somebody you can go to for consolation, for advice, for helping do bat mitzvahs and stuff like that. And so maybe they do bat mitzvahs now and bar mitzvahs, I don't know, but just to have more of the traditional way of doing those things too. So I ended up leaving. We ended up leaving. And okay, I've only gone back occasionally since then, so that was a long time ago. But I can't, it's hard to believe it's already 30 years that it's been around, and it's very nice that it is. And I don't, and I've talked about, my kids are not in the house anymore, so I would like to go back and revisit Bet Tikva now, too, and see who's there. And I remember at the time that we were leaving, Deb and her partner had just recently, at that point, become involved, and I thought they were great people and to get to know. And I know that they've been very active the whole time since then.
Yeah.
Bet Tikva.
Where did you go after Dor Hadash?
Temple Sinai, so I'm there now.
What was the integration like then?
Well, it was interesting because at Temple Sinai, there was there was one family, one woman with a child who we had. She wasn't in our Daughters of Lilith group, but she was. She had been to Bet Tikva, but she had a son, so she wanted to, she went and joined Temple Sinai and told us that she thought it would be, there was the rabbi there who, he was, I guess he'd only been there a few years at that point, Rabbi Gibson, but he seemed to be okay. She told us that she thought Temple Sinai was the most liberal of all the synagogues there. And then she left, but at the time that we belonged, we joined at that point. I think we were the only gay couple with kids, probably maybe the only gay couple too who joined. And at the time, there were two rabbis there, Rabbi, and even though he professed to be totally welcoming, even Rabbi Gibson at that point would not have done a gay marriage. And the other rabbi was even more concerned about gay involvement in the temple. But they welcomed us, and but nobody ever, so it was without any acknowledgement about our being gay. And we didn't push it either. So, you know, this book that I mentioned before was I think the title says a lot, Beyond Acceptance. So they were very accepting, but it wasn't like welcoming. It was just accepting. And, a few years after that, other lesbian couples who had been involved in our gay lesbian parents groups, I don't know, and they also had been involved in Bet Tikva they were involved in Bet Tikva for a while too. Carol Krupski and Iris Attar, have you heard their names? I don't know.
Yeah, they've come up on the list that people have mentioned.
Okay, so they also joined Temple Sinai at that point. They had two sons. And then our friends Barbara Milch and Eti Reut, who are Eti's Israeli, but they were in our. She was in our. Actually, Barbara was in our lesbian Daughters of Lilith group too. And they started to. They joined Temple Sinai too, and so then I think the rabbis learned to be more welcoming, although there's still some issues with that, like Rabbi Gibson, 2 years ago, he started to acknowledge Gay Pride Week with a Gay Pride service, and then he said, I was the first, it kind of sounds like Trump in that way, I was the first rabbi to have a Gay Pride service 30 years ago. Maybe he did, I don't know, I wasn't there, but he never had anything like that until 2 years ago. But by then, I think it's kind of too late. And like they have a new rabbi now, a younger woman, and she encouraged people to start a lesbian and gay affinity group when she started a couple years ago, which I thought was a great idea. But I think it also became too late. It was too late because we don't need it now. And also, what happened was that the people who came, they were my age, and there were only a couple people, young people, and it wasn't enough young people to make it. I didn't want to put in effort for old people, you know. So anyway, I'm still there. I still go to services, I'm comfortable there. And Barbara, I taught Sunday school there for 11 or 12 years, and Barbara still teaches Sunday school. One of her kids teaches Sunday school, Hebrew school now too. So now Rabbi Gibson would marry us, but we ended up not. We ended up having just a very quick non-religious service, which I regret. But we needed. Both of our older daughter was not living in Pittsburgh after she went away for college, and we really wanted to have this wedding when she was home, and at the time that we were hoping to get married, there was only one weekend she was going to be home, so we just quickly did that at home. So I'm sure you know a lot more about what's going on with Bet Tikva than I know right now. But
thing I want to, well, continue what you were just going to say.
It was a really good to have that experience of working with the gay men community in doing something, because also at the time there was very little social interaction between the lesbian community and the gay men's community. that may not have been so true in the other religious communities, the gay religious communities that were popping up all over, the Christian ones. I don't know about that. But it was nice, and we met great people as a result of that. And we did have that feeling of creating an important community for ourselves. And even though I'm saying that Temple Sinai still, I think it's too late for Temple Sinai. There's no need anymore, I don't believe, to have like a gay pride service socially anymore. But it still is very nice that, to me, that Bet Tikva still exists, because people are still feeling some need to have that kind of communal identity. Although things have changed so much, so I'm not so sure it's just really because the more established community is exclusive anymore. I don't think it is that. It's just because it's just a warm, welcoming community in and of itself. And,
yeah.
And that's why synagogues are, I think, congregations are created anyway, start like that, because you know how there used to be, you know, Russian Jewish synagogues and Polish Jewish synagogues, because everybody wants their own group, and then they kind of died. But anyway, but Bet Tikva still exists, so that's very nice, and I'm glad about that. I'm hoping to. So it was a really wonderful thing that it got started in Pittsburgh, and a lot of cities didn't have that. Pittsburgh did, and it's probably outlasted a lot of these gay congregations that have probably come and gone by now too.
So we went over this at the beginning, but I just want to make sure that I understand all the pieces of it. Would you mind one more time going through the progression from Benot Eish to Achiot Or to Daughters of Lilith?
I never was involved with Benot Eish, but
it was a regional.
It was
Jewish women's?
Yeah, mostly from Philadelphia, New York, but they were feminist Jewish women who had. I actually just read that their first retreat. They decided to start a retreat, and their first retreat was in 1981, and it must have been in Philadelphia or near Philadelphia, and they gathered some of the at that point, the foremost thinkers and academicians and feminist, strong feminist people. And they started this annual retreat, and it had been going for a few years. Other people wanted to join it, but they couldn't. They didn't want to expand. So then this other group, Achiot Or, it mimicked what Benot Eish was doing.
Simply because Benot Eish couldn't accept more members,
right,
or wouldn't accept more members.
Right. And so Faith and I learned about that group, and we had learned that that it was just starting because Benot Eish couldn't accept more members, and we decided to go to it. And we were the only ones from Pittsburgh, and most of the people there also were the same kind of very progressive Jewish feminist power people, as I would say, and maybe not, but whoever else heard about the group, and they signed up to go, we went. And then we went. So we went for about 3 or 4 years. It was an annual, 3-day weekend thing, different places, out there in the Northeast, some different places. And after, I don't know when it was maybe probably before the last time that Faith and I went to one of those things, but we decided we wanted to organize this Daughters of Lilith thing, and that's what the group, and that's what we did. And that lasted for about 4 or 5 years, too.
Was Achiot Or and Benot Eish women generally, or lesbian specifically?
Women.
Just women. But Daughters of Lilith was...
We decided, it was just lesbians.
Just lesbians. Yeah. And just Jewish lesbians?
Yeah, yeah.
And there was enough to start a group?
Yeah, there was, yeah. But I don't know how we rounded up these women, but they were all, I don't know, I guess most of our social circles were, for mine at least, and I think for most people, were really, were nurtured at the women's, Wild Sisters, now I remember the name. It was originally called Wild Sisters, That was the first name of the restaurant. And a lot, and that became a big place of gathering for women after, maybe in addition to or substituting for the bar scene. But that's where. So there was one, I can't remember the name of that. The bar, there was one bar that was known for women coming on Thursday nights and getting together, and I can't remember the name of it. But so that's where I started to meet. That's where I first met my original group of lesbian friends. But then after that, it was Wild Sisters, and so we met quite a number of Jewish lesbians. And it is interesting because maybe it has to do with heritage and history of being oppressed as Jews, and also as lesbians. And you want to make those connections, and it's an important part of our life and our history. So it's, and feminine, we were all feminists, so it was just really, it was an interesting time. It was fun to be together with those people. Many of them are still around Pittsburgh, but I don't go to bars anymore, stuff like that. There's no women's restaurant anymore, so stuff like that. So I kind of missed that. So maybe now Bet Tikva is going to be the focus. Would be the focus again for a gay, lesbian, Jewish community, then, or even whatever. So anyway, that was.
Is there anything else we should talk about?
No, I don't think so. I've covered what I remember, which isn't that much. But
well, thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome.